Y'all all got to hear Ross yesterday tell you about the 194 and our experiences this fall with it and everything. And he was true. We probably both took each other's name in vain once or twice last fall. But I do want y'all to know that that's a great piece of equipment now. And that Loomis and all the boys there were true partners, and we all worked through this thing and made something there that I think everybody can be proud of. So I was giving you the democratic response there from Ross's presentation yesterday. Bobby, come on.
Thanks, David. So the first project I'm going to talk about is looking at fuel use audits and cotton gins. And my collaborator on this is Paul Funk from the Southwestern Cotton Gin Research in Mesilla Park. So our goals are generally, one, we found that we really don't have good data on the fuel use in cotton gins. There's some survey data, but we all know there's problems with that in terms of, you know, how much is used for your gin. If you're heating some air at your seed house or have some other facilities there, you're using gas, and that's probably on your meter. And Tommy can tell you there's all kinds of problems with that survey data. So we really want to get some measurements. We want to know a little bit more about it. You know, what best practices might we use in gins? Where do we have some opportunities where we can do some research and save some fuel consumption? And that's looking at both drying and moisture restoration. Some data we have shows that a lot of gins are using a lot of fuel to add moisture back in the cotton, sometimes after they've taken it out. So, of course, one big justification for this project is we want to improve sustainability. This has been a big push from the industry, you know, from consumers. Of course, we're looking at reducing, you know, our emissions, fossil fuel consumption. Of course, economic sustainability is important, too. And Tommy's surveys show that fuel cost is usually a little under 10% of the cost of ginning, but it's wildly variable. I think he had gins in the last survey. It might have been from zero, pretty much nothing per bale, we weren't doing any drying, up to maybe it was $12 a bale, I think you had some data. So it's a difficult expense to predict. In a wet year, it can be really high, and if you've got to, you know, refill your propane tank in the winter, it's going to be more expensive. One thing we've seen, though, is, you know, of course, hydraulic fracturing has kept natural gas and propane prices lower. But we still see they vary a lot. Just a few years ago, propane was as much as, I think, some residential prices were $8 a gallon. Of course, gins now, they 80 cents a gallon. So, but it's still an expense, and we want to look at ways to reduce that. A big thing is that drying might be a limiting factor if we want to look at reducing the amount of air we're using at the gins. Our drying systems depend on using certain volumes of air. If you reduce the amount of air, how well do they work? We don't know that. And if you're really considering both electricity for seed cotton drying, this is to run the fans that you're using in your drying systems. Yes, it's conveying the material too, but if you weren't drying, you could possibly use an alternative means of conveyance. So considering that and the fuel use, 29% of the energy at gins is used for seed cotton drying. We know that gin drying systems have low fuel use efficiency. One study found about 16%. I know some other numbers that are out there seem to indicate something in that 20-25% range. Part of the problem is we use a concurrent flow. The air and the cotton are flowing in the same direction. It's inherently less efficient, but it is convenient for how we handle cotton. Some work has been done looking at insulating drying systems. They showed a benefit. We tend to think, you know, depending on your how much drying you're doing, you know, what temperatures you're using, there may be a benefit, you know, up to the mix point where you've got those higher temperatures. We're looking into that a little more, just some of the calculations for that. One paper looked at using a heat exchanger. I think it was basically a pipe in a pipe to extract the hot air, reduce fuel use slightly. Pulling combustion air from the ceiling, yeah, it saved fuel use because the air was warmer, but they didn't consider the extra energy required to pull the air from a pipe up to the top of their gin. So our recommended practice for drying is, there's the ASAB standard, which is up for reaffirmation this year, so vote. It's the dual controls, the primary and then the high temperature one. recent kind of, I guess, survey of some gins in the West found that less than half of them had that or were using that. Again, we see those fuel use numbers that are pretty low. Again, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the fuel use data that we do have is from surveys, and we really don't know if we'd start changing things, if we change temperature significantly, airflow rates, as I mentioned, what about our mass flow rates, how that affects our drying efficiency. Obviously, if you raise the temperature, you do more drying, but how does it affect your efficiency? So kind of the objectives of this study, we want to estimate the fuel used by each burner in a gin, calculate the fuel use efficiency of each drying system, and kind of determine the impact of some of these operational parameters that I've mentioned, the airflow rate, seed cotton flow rate, seed cotton moisture, and also our gin design. You know, we have a lot of different designs of drying systems in terms of an actual physical dryer. In some cases, we don't have a physical dryer. We just heat the air and convey the cotton with it and then separate it at a cylinder cleaner. So what effect does that have? So our methods that we followed, basically we're calculating the energy used to heat the air. So for that, we need an estimate of the air flow rate. So we're just using a pitot tube to measure the velocity pressure in the center of the pipe, and using pipe diameter and air density from the temperature to calculate the mass flow rate of air. And we also will use the ambient temperature and then that heated air temperature, get a temperature difference. And we need to log all this data while the samples are being collected. We're collecting samples for a period of an hour or so at a gin. So we install some little miniature data loggers to do this. And this shows kind of above the burner there. In some cases, we were too close to the burner and we'd get some really high temperatures before it was the flow had thermally mixed throughout the pipe. So sometimes we were a little too close, but some of that's just limited by the gin layout and what we could do and get to. So let's see, let's go on. And this just shows that logger and read the temperature right on it. These loggers are pretty inexpensive and pretty easy to work with and portable. They're not the most durable. We broke a few, but I think for the price, it was a reasonable trade-off. So now, like I said, we tried to get the temperature right above somewhere near the burner. In some cases, where we got a straight section of pipe to get our pitot tube readings was well downstream. So we'd take another temperature reading by the pitot tube to we know the density at the pitot tube for calculating the actual velocity there and airflow rate. And so the same setup. We've got the thermocouple there, and then that logger, rather than just plugging in directly to a thermocouple, the box has a temperature transmitter and a pressure transmitter to convert those signals to 4 to 20 milliamps and a battery in there to run it. So, and see where we're putting some of this equipment. And I'll go back. One thing we did, we intended to make this really a portable system, so all our hardware we can move from gin to gin, and we just mount these flanges so we could plug them and leave the gin and plug it up and not interfere too much. And this shows it uses readings in milliamps on those sensors. So we're going to calculate the energy used to heat the air. This is basically the equation used, and that's really just we're calculating the mass flow rate of air. That's the density, the pipe area, and then the velocity, and then the energy required to heat the air. We're using the temperature difference in the specific heat of the air. So we're going to estimate fuel use from that, and that's just dividing that energy required by the heating value of our fuel, propane or natural gas, and the burner efficiency, which we don't always know that, but at some gins we can actually get a number for the period of time where they're sampling. You know, we read their gas meter. And Paul had a GoPro camera that he set up to take regular images, and so we were getting some time-stamped images of the fuel meter. Some gins use propane. There's no real good way to get a reading like that there. So, and then we want to calculate the energy that we actually use to evaporate the moisture in our drying systems. And this is just simply taking moisture samples. We're getting them before and after each drying system, wherever there was a safe place to collect the sample in the gin. It was safe, but it wasn't always comfortable or easy. Sometimes it was hot and kind of cramped in some of the locations, but dusty, but we managed to get it done. So we were collecting 30 samples at each gin, and basically once per bale. It was a reasonable rate, and some of the preliminary data we had, Paul had worked with their statistician to kind of settle on a number that would give us good data from the gins. And we're following the standard Shepherd procedure that we usually use for seed cotton drying, for the most part. And this is just some of the moisture samples that we see here. One of the technicians getting some sea cotton moisture samples and using the metal cans. We've gone to using a lot of plastic cans. This is under a stick machine before it went into the overhead conveyor there. It was out of a last stage cylinder cleaner and just a chute, a gravity fed one at a roller gin. Getting samples of the feeder apron at Saw Gin. That was a pretty standard location there. And then we just calculate the drying system fuel efficiency, which is essentially the energy that we use to evaporate the water divided by that total energy we're using to heat the air. So in 2015, it was really Paul that got out to the gins and put the equipment in. It was in four gins, and it was a lot of trying to work out some kinks in our system and see if we could get some good data, and we did that. Now this year we've been to, I think 26 gins was the number I came up with, but Paul may have been to another one or two, but it's at least 25, so for at least that many, so that's my best estimate right now. We got in 10 states. The gins range pretty wildly, 20 to 60 bales per hour. We have both propane, natural gas gins. Some of them, I think there were some that only had one stage installed. There were certainly some that were only using one stage, and given the dry conditions we had in much of the cotton belt during the ginning season, some were barely using one stage at all when we were there. Many of them are using humid air restoration and a wide variety of drying systems. And I don't think this list is inclusive, and I'm not, you know, trying to leave out anybody's favorite drying system. But, you know, we had hot boxes, towers of different kinds, vertical flow, colliders, fountains, jets, high slips, no dryer. So 2015, we only got really good data from one gin. We found it was about 15% fuel use efficiency on the first stage. We were confident with those numbers, which is, you know, that's consistent with what we've seen before. Some data from this year's work. These are some moisture samples, and we can see at the module feeder, it averages just under 7%, but we see a pretty wide variation through this sampling. You know, we got some wetter cotton towards the end there. You know, we're getting up around 8% sea cotton moisture. Now, what we're looking at here is after that first stage drying, and we're just under 6%. And one point that we want to make here, this gin, they skimmed air off that first stage burner, so they... or after the dryer, so they didn't have another burner. Now, some of these are using a large volume of air in the first stage, but still, they're not using a second burner. And we can see there's still drying being done. That air that's removed still has certainly some drying potential. As the final moisture there is 5.5. This is looking, a lot of times where they have split stream, we try and sample both sides, and we see the two sides here are pretty similar. Some gins, like I said, had three stages. Here, they had that third stage turned off, but there's still it's only a 0.1% difference, and I don't know that we've run any statistics to see if that's statistically significant, but it does look like there's a chance it will be. So ambient air can certainly do some drying if you're particularly less humid, warm weather. So instrumentation worked well. We thought our sampling protocol was effective. We have lots of data to analyze, and we'd hope to have a student worker, but kind of some bureaucratic mess. We couldn't get one this year, but we will have one to start working on this soon. So, and again, another thing, that the gin season was unusually dry in many regions, much of the Mid-South, Southeast, And so, of course, drying, obviously, the weather plays a big role in that. So we're going to repeat this, of course, and I don't want to wish for wet weather, but, you know, we'll take what we get. So we want to thank Cotton Incorporated for supporting this work. And also, like I said, we worked our technicians pretty hard on this project, so I want to thank those guys for getting the work done. So with that, I'm a little over, but I guess I'll move on and y'all can catch me later.